Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
And now, here's your guest host, Steve Armiscal, without the mister.
Hey, I know. Yes, you did without the mister. No need for a mister at all. What a great day in Montana. I love this time of year. I don't know if you're a football fan, but it's fall is always great. And this extension of summer that we're experiencing right now, it's just a really cool time to be in our beautiful state of Montana. Thank you for being a part of Voices of Montana. Today, we're going to talk about healthcare, and we all kind of come at that from a similar perspective. At some point in time, either in our past or future, or maybe even today, we're a patient. So we're involved in that healthcare system from that standpoint. You also may be a provider, and so you are in the mix also in healthcare. Well, there's a lot of changes going on in healthcare, and there's a lot of stress involved in healthcare. I referred to it as SOS. Cody, remember what SOS stands for? It was kind of that disaster. I think it stood for Save Our Ships, right? Way back when. And it was like, hey, something concerning is going on. Now, I know this personally because my wife has been a nurse, an RN, for 32 years. My son is an orthopedic spine surgeon. I don't know. He got all those smarts from his mom, obviously. My daughter is a mental health therapist, and she works at the ER intake for mental health. And so my whole family lives that healthcare system, the stresses involved, the short staff, all those parts and pieces. And then obviously they have to respond to all the new regulations that come down. I don't understand all of that, but Ed is online today. He's talking with us. He's going to help us understand that. Ed Buttrey, president and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association. Welcome, Ed. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me on today.
Now, I've created this kind of disaster scenario in healthcare. I didn't mean to overstate it, but there's so much going on right now, and I want to dive into that with you today. Before we start that deep conversation, I just want to know how you're doing. You've been kind of experiencing your own whirlwind. You finished up a legislative session, and then a month and a half after that was done, now you're in this new role as CEO, president of the Montana Hospital Association. How's that going?
Well, it's been interesting. I really started the job at an interesting point in time. My first day was right as the Big Beautiful Bill was being debated in the Senate and House up in Congress. And so really my first days and weeks were spent tracking the policy and changes that were being debated in Congress, spending a lot of time answering questions from the federal delegation, and I will give them a ton of credit. They were really interested in what the effect was going to be in Montana, and so they did reach out.
Excellent.
There was a lot of new opportunities we were exploring as part of the bill, like the Rural Health Transformation Program I know we'll talk about.
Yep.
And then finding out things that were not addressed in the bill. And certainly I'm trying to do this while I'm trying to figure out how the MHA operates, meet the employees, figure out the member needs. I can tell you it's been a challenge, but it's been an incredible opportunity. I've long been an advocate for bringing healthcare sectors together in really what's a very competitive industry to advocate unity for the things that would assure sustainability and access for healthcare, and that's important.
Now, Ed, for those that may not know about the Montana Hospital Association, can you give us a little, just a quick overview? What is the Montana Hospital Association? What are the responsibilities and the scope of work there?
Sure. Well, the MHA is a nonprofit organization, and we represent really the full spectrum of healthcare, hospital inpatient, outpatient services, skilled nursing, home health, hospice, physician services, assisted living, all the way down to senior housing and insurance services. So mainly what we do is advocate for our members. We do a lot of work in administering federal and state grants. We provide education, workforce solutions, emergency preparedness, and things like we develop delivery models. Many people may not know this, but the critical access model was actually pioneered at the MHA in Montana. And so we do those things and really anything else that our members might need.
So this is a broad kind of big picture question, and then we're going to dive into all the changes that you're now in a role to manage. What's the state of healthcare in Montana? How are our hospitals doing?
Well, healthcare is always in a constant state of flux and uncertainty, I'll tell you that. We are constantly dealing with changing state and federal regulations. Labor challenges has been a real problem. Yeah. And, of course, funding is always an issue, whether that's coming from the government or from private insurance companies. And then you add on top of that, technology is always changing. Infrastructure needs change. We have an older infrastructure in place, in, especially in rural Montanas. And the cost of just providing that care is skyrocketing. So I will tell you, though, when you think about all these challenges, it's pretty amazing that we haven't had a single facility closure in Montana. And that's really due to folks finding innovative solutions to ensure that people have access in their local communities to health care. But it's been challenging.
I think from a patient standpoint, you know, I added a little drama to our discussion with all the stress and everything. And I'm coming out at that because my whole family's in healthcare and I hear those conversations. But from a patient standpoint, I can show up at my doctor, and sometimes there's an accessibility, like I've got to plan it and schedule it. Sometimes it's a little bit challenging, but I get quality care. We have great providers, nurses and technicians, doctors in our healthcare system throughout Montana. Would you agree?
Oh, I do. And I've been spending a lot of time, especially in our rural areas, and to meet these people, whether they're the leadership team or they're actually the care providers, their most important goal and what they're thinking of at all times is that people have a place in their local community where they can get the help they need, whether it's, you know, your basic health care needs, emergency room, or it's long-term senior services. They really are doing everything they can to make sure that that access is there, and it's quite inspirational.
Now, you mentioned this. I did in the opening. There are pressures on that existing system, not even factoring in some of the changes that are coming down our way. The pressures exist. Staffing shortages, I called it, that's S, and then overwhelming patient loads. And part of it is because we're getting older, present company included, and we just need more. And then I still think, Ed, you can correct me, I still think we're carrying the stress load that we had working through and coming out of COVID. Do those pressure points, are they resonating in our hospitals throughout Montana?
Oh, yeah. And we all know it's about cost. If you talk to the public, the biggest issue in healthcare is cost. And that's something that we take really at heart. I can tell you personally, I think the whole system's broken. I think we need to rebuild the system. And that's everything governing hospitals, providers, payers, pharma, you know, the whole thing. But this has to happen at the federal level, and we just don't see that they have an appetite to do that. So what we see is policymakers focusing on individual pieces of healthcare, and that usually means more regulation. And I will tell you that while these changes that they make always seek to address the cost, what we normally see is that we get administrative burden increases, and which just adds cost to the system. But, you know, you talked about COVID. It's interesting, since COVID, the cost of our labor has risen at least 25% across the board. And it's harder to find providers, healthcare providers, than it has been in the past. So hospitals will have to rely on travelers, which add even more cost.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you've got all this skyrocketing cost of labor, of supplies, of pharmaceuticals, but your reimbursement has not risen anywhere close to that rate. So that you have the constant issue of expenses rising, revenue staying relatively flat. How do you continue to provide the same services and do everything the community requires when you have that financial model? And it's a struggle.
So if our system is broken, where do you start? I mean, how do you even, and you said, hey, things got to change in DC. We're going to talk about the changes they've already made, but where do you start to restructure a system like that, that is a system that is the phrase, Ed, too big to fail? We can't allow our healthcare system to fail. It's essential in who we are. And so where do you even start?
Well, you were going to talk about the changes happening in D.C., and really when you look at the big, beautiful bill and the impact of healthcare, it's all about Medicaid. So again, they're addressing one part of the healthcare system. I don't know what the whole solution is. I think you're going to have all parties at the table, and this is part of the problem, is the different parties in healthcare, whether you're talking about the providers, the insurers, the hospitals, pharma, they've never come together to come up with a unified solution. They've, in many cases, in a lot of cases, been on opposite sides of policies. So you put lawmakers in the position where they themselves have to try to figure out the solutions. And in the end, what they do doesn't necessarily improve quality or access, but just raises the cost. So I think about this in the private sector. If you're in an industry in Montana and you have issues, who's going to know best how to solve the problems and to rebuild that industry? Is it going to be people within the industry, or is it going to be lawmakers in Helena and Washington, D.C.? So I think part of the blame is on us, that we haven't come together as an industry and offered a solution at Congress and at the state levels. I have some ideas. You know, that's probably an eight-hour phone call we'll have to have on that. But
all right, we'll schedule that.
It's going to take everybody.
I want to start diving into the changes in D.C., but before, I want to back up because I think there are positive things going on in Montana healthcare. You touched on that. You're seeing, and you have a better perspective of the whole state than I would perhaps, but you're seeing major investments in healthcare infrastructure, not just in the, you know, in the big communities like Billings or Missoula or what have you, but your Great Falls, you're seeing them throughout the state. There's, even notwithstanding the pressures, they realize we've got to modernize the way we deliver medicine. We've got more infrastructure. We got to build out capacity. You're seeing those investments play out. What's your sense of how that's going? Are you seeing capital investment in healthcare across the state?
Well, I think it's in patches. I can't make the blanket statement that everyone is improving their infrastructure. We certainly are seeing that in our larger cities, and we're seeing it in some rural areas. Some of that came about because low interest rates years ago allowed these facilities to come up with financing to build those infrastructure improvements. But we also, at the same point, have a lot of facilities that are aging, have tens of millions of dollars of deferred maintenance, and they don't have the ability to do those infrastructure updates within our current system. So I think it's a mix. I am excited about some of the construction and new work that is happening across Montana to provide even better service, but I'm also very concerned about some of these communities that don't have the financial ability to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Ed, here we go. We're going to talk Medicaid, and you, I consider you an expert in this because of your time in the legislature. And I'm not suggesting, you know, your hands on and feet on the ground making it work at that level, but on a policy level, you've been very involved in that. We had opportunity to interact with one another. I was viewing it from an economic development perspective. You were looking at it for what's the best policy and approach for Montana to address Medicaid expansion and then reauthorization. And then you have the feds kind of swoop in and go, hey, guess what? We're going to make another change. Start to walk through that with us and maybe start with how Montana approached Medicaid. And then we're going to take a break and we'll come back and then layer in that. All right, now here's what the feds had done for us that we have to respond to. Start with what did Montana do?
Yeah, so Montana, we've been very successful in designing, I think, the best Medicaid system we could for a state like Montana. We designed a system that had accountability and reforms built into it, that was designed to help provide for the workforce, was really looking forward to what requirements were going to be at the federal level, like work requirements, like cost sharing, those type of things. So over time, we've implemented a solution that, as we see these changes in the big bill, are going to really benefit us so that we won't have the impacts that other states are seeing with the bill. And that's just because we simply have a well-designed system that a lot of people have been involved with putting together.
Now, when we're going to take a break now, when we come back, let's start to talk about the changes coming from the feds and how Montana will need to respond to that. We're talking with Ed Buttrey, president and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association on Voices of Montana. Well, we're back at it on Voices of Montana. We're having a great conversation with Ed Buttrey, president and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association. Hey, if you have a question for Ed or for around healthcare, phone lines are open, and that number is 866-627-5483. You're welcome to call, and Ed is happy to tackle any questions related to, I'm setting you up there, Ed, but thanks for joining us today. Hey, I was just reflecting on the years that we had interacted and worked together while you were serving in Helena, in the Senate, and then the State House, and you had been working on the issue of Medicaid. I'm curious, how many years you kind of dove into this being a policy objective for you? How many years in the legislature?
Well, I will be ending my 16th year in the legislature, and I really got involved in about 2013 in an industry I knew nothing about previous to that. And it was just because I was frustrated that we weren't looking for any solutions in Montana. We were either, you know, pass the ACA, kill the ACA, and no one was trying to find something that would actually work. And that got me involved.
Yeah, and you did, I would say, an excellent job leading through. You know, we have a conservative legislature, and in many ways we like that, but they have a certain perspective, and then you have another one. You had to find a balance there toward a solution, and you did a masterful job, Ed, in working through that, and honored to have added a voice there now and then. Let's talk about the big, beautiful bill. Talk about figuring out policy and behind the scenes intrigue of that process. What's in the bill? How does it impact Medicaid, and specifically what's coming down to Montana?
Sure. Well, the big bill was Congress's real effort, at least in healthcare, to try to control the big upward growth of costs in the Medicaid program. So what they had done in preparation for the bill was to take a deep dive into Medicaid and find the things that they thought they could change that were the drivers of most of these cost increases. And in the end, they came up with legislation that they expect will reduce federal Medicaid spending about $900 billion over the next decade, so about $100 billion a year. They did this, most of the cuts, about 90% of the cuts were through a couple things they did. First, they capped what's called state-directed payments. That accounts for about $150 billion in savings. I talked earlier about how well-designed our Medicaid system is in Montana. One of the things that we chose was not to use state-directed payments. So those big cuts at the federal level actually have no effect in Montana.
Excellent.
The feds also put restrictions on provider taxes, so they capped provider taxes. Again, we do have provider taxes in Montana, but we had set them at a very low rate, around 2%. The feds capped those taxes at 3.5%, so once again, did not have an effect on Montana. One of the things that will have an effect is the big bill required work for the expansion population, and that means that they've got to meet some work requirements throughout the year. It's a big cost savings, according to the Fed, but it's also a big cost to the states to implement these requirements. We had put work requirements in our law in 2019, so we've got a little bit of a head start.
Right.
And then the states doubled up the eligibility determinations. The amount of time previous for determining eligibility was every 12 months. They changed it to 6 months for the expansion population. That will affect Montana. Again, we don't feel that we built a system that really addresses waste, fraud, and abuse. So we don't know that that's going to have a big impact on enrollment, but it is going to be expensive for the state. So all in all, big changes, a lot of money savings at the federal level. There's some things that will affect Montana, but we sit, when you compare us to other states, in a really good spot.
Now, Ed, when we went through that kind of what I would refer to as that first cycle of redetermining eligibility, we had a lot of ripples through Montana, and you probably got a ton of phone calls. What are we doing? How's this working? I got calls even in my role. Are we going to now experience that kind of redefining eligibility now every 6 months? And do you think we've worked past that initial shock that we had to experience as part of that?
Well, it's a valid concern. It's one that we've all shared. I will tell you, it's a little bit apples and oranges. After COVID, the redetermination was done on everyone in the entire Medicaid program all at once. And what this is doubling the amount of determinations for just the expansion population, and it's done over a 12-month period. So it's based on your enrollment date. So it won't be everyone in January. You know, you could take the population and spread them out over 6 months. So it is a little apples and orange, but we've been to the state. We've expressed to them our concerns that we don't want people losing coverage because the state doesn't have processes and systems in place to do the work. We're working with them to ensure that when we start doing these six-month redeterminations that there will be policies, processes, programs in place so that it's not punitive to people that truly do qualify for the program. And I'm optimistic, and we will work with the state to make sure it happens.
There was an interim committee of the legislature a week or two ago, and there were discussions about these changes coming down to Montana and creating a stronger infrastructure in Montana to manage those. And the number I heard was, hey, we need 40 additional FTE to manage all these changes. Is that accurate? And I could just imagine what that room felt like. I'm assuming you were there or somebody from MHA was there. Describe what took place at that interim committee session.
Sure. Yeah, the state did say to do these redeterminations and to implement the work requirements, which means verifying work, verifying exemptions, that it would take an additional 40 to 50 employees at the state level. That's a shocker. Certainly, you know, in a very conservative legislature, our goal is that we're not increasing the size of government. We would, as a legislature, certainly appreciate if the private sector was able to participate in that so we didn't have this huge growth. But that's what the department says they need. I will tell you that 40 to 50 employees does not include employees that they would need to administer the Rural Health Transformation Program, which is a significant opportunity for Montana. So I think the DPHHS number at the end of the day is going to be much larger than 40 to 50. That's going to be a challenge for the legislature. When we come back in 2027, if the state is asking to grow the state that many employees, it's going to be a struggle.
And I want to talk to you about those opportunities and challenges in rural healthcare in Montana. I'm just learning bits and pieces of this rural healthcare transformation piece that was a part of those federal changes. And it could provide some benefits to Montana. I heard there's $200 million there. I don't know what our share of that might be, but we're going to come back in about in just a little bit, and let's dive into that because there are unique challenges in rural healthcare in Montana, and I just have this sense that our federal legislators don't get it, but now they're showing up with some funds to maybe help address that. So when we come back, Ed's going to unwrap that, and maybe there's some opportunity ahead for rural healthcare in Montana when we come back.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Well, Tom, this is not Tom's voice. Tom is out on vacation, well-deserved break. Man, he does such a great job leading the conversation for Voices of Montana all across the state, and he's taken an end of summer, early fall break, which is well-deserved. We all need to catch our breath that way, so I'm honored as Steve Arviscow to just kind of be pitch-hitting for Tom and on Voices of Montana. And we're talking with Ed Buttrey, President and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association. Ed, I want to talk about rural healthcare, and I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for rural healthcare. When my son graduated first medical school, he went to North Dakota, to University of North Dakota for med school, and then residency outside of Detroit in the big city, and then he did a fellowship at Ohio State. So he's been in these big communities. And I said, hey, come back to Montana, practice in Montana. He looked at a job in Butte as an orthopedic spine surgeon. It just didn't connect. But now he's working in North Carolina, and at least he's working out of a rural hospital in North Carolina. One day I'm going to convince him to come back and do that in Montana. But I share that story to say I'm proud of him for picking a rural hospital and engaging in healthcare, because there are so many unique challenges in rural medicine in Montana. That's how we're wired. What's going on in rural hospitals? And then talk to us about this new opportunity that's presenting itself.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head. You know, rural healthcare is the backbone of healthcare, certainly in Montana. And most of Montana, if not all, by some definitions, is rural. And what happened with the federal legislation, the big bill, is Congress did understand that these Medicaid cuts that they were putting in place were going to disproportionately harm our rural and frontier healthcare systems, which is all of Montana. And so they decided to create this program called the Rural Health Transformation Program, and they put $50 billion into a bucket of money that will be dispersed over 5 years, starting in 2026 and going through 2030. And it's an incredible opportunity for Montana, for our rural and frontier healthcare, to make sure that it's sustainable and that people can have healthcare in their local communities. And you think about Montana, if you don't have a healthcare facility in your small rural town, you may have to drive 200, 300 miles in the middle of snow and winter just to get your basic healthcare needs met. And that is something we're really concerned with. So providing for that financial stability is amazing. This program can be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Montana. And currently the state is now trying to identify those areas of greatest needs and opportunity, which is no small feat because, as we said before, we're such a large and diverse state. And we only have until the first week of November to figure this out.
Oh, wow.
And then we submit an application to the federal government for funding. If they accept our application, then we can truly start transforming rural healthcare in Montana. If your application is approved, you're going to get $100 million a year for those 5 years, so $500 million in total, and they have to be used to provide financial stability and access of rural health care. Now, there's also a second bucket of money, and it also has about $5 billion a year in it, where the federal government and CMS can decide who has greatest needs and has the best projects that are going to provide the most stability for rural health care. And then they have the option to delegate that second bucket of money as they see fit. The only statutory requirement is that at least 25% of states have to get it. Mm-hmm. So there'll be states that get nothing. There'll be states that get another $100 million. There'll be states that get more than that. So I often hear the $200 million per year that you mentioned, but this could actually be substantially more. It really just depends on how convincing we are with our application and how the state determines the best uses of the money would be. And I can talk for hours about this program, but it really comes down to this. The state is going to have to prove the funding is needed and is absolutely can provide for sustainability of rural and frontier health care. We furthermore have to prove that any projects that we utilize the money for are sustainable past the rural health program without government funding. So the idea is get capabilities, get employees, get workforce issues, housing, whatever in place, and then make sure that your model proves that the revenue you're going to create, the efficiencies you're going to create, are going to be able to keep these things in place long after the program's gone. It's a heck of an opportunity. It's going to take the best of the state, of all of us. We, the MHA, have been in to see the state, and we are unified and ready to assist them in any way possible because we absolutely have to optimize this opportunity. We will never see it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to have an application ready by November 1 for that first tranche, and then there's a different process for that second tranche of resources. And I want to reference a report that I saw. I was just thinking about rural healthcare, and I saw a report from Becker's Hospital Review. You probably look at that information. They do really good just snippets of data and information on the state of healthcare across the country. And in this particular report they're referring to from the Center of Healthcare Quality and Payment, it did an analysis of the financial risk of rural healthcare across the country. And they broke it down by state. And they looked at how many rural hospitals in your state, given their current financial position, are on track to be closing within 6 to 7 years. And then they drilled down further and said, how many of your rural hospitals are under what they call immediate risk of closure over the next 2 to 3 years? And they didn't list the hospitals by name that they may have in the detailed report, but in this particular one. But Montana's on the list. And it said that we have 19 hospitals that are at risk within the next 5, 6, 7 years of being challenged and even potentially closure within that period because of being under financial jeopardy. And then there are 6 Montana hospitals based on this report that are in what they call immediate risk of closing. That's, hey, if something doesn't change within the next 2 to 3 years, that hospital can't keep its doors open. And every state has multiple rural hospitals listed. So I'm glad Congress is kind of paying attention to the reality of what's going on in rural healthcare. I'm assuming the MHA is very much involved in what's happening at every hospital level, but you probably have an acute interest in what's going on in your rural hospitals. Are you seeing hospitals in Montana in financial jeopardy?
Well, it's interesting. We're always concerned about our small rural frontier hospitals, and we've seen those reports. And there's a lot of studies out there that attempt to measure financial stability of these small hospitals. And most of them use kind of a one-size-fits-all set of parameters to decide who's yeah. financially healthy and who's not. And it doesn't necessarily work because survivability is different in every state. I will tell you that right as of today, there is not one hospital in Montana that's at risk of closure. Certainly without Medicaid expansion, there would have been, but there's not. But the current environment is not putting them in any better financial position to ensure that they don't get to that risk. What will happen before someone closes is they'll start cutting service lines. They'll start reducing staff, those type of things, and there'll be real indicators. The MHA does track the financials of all hospitals in Montana, and so we're constantly looking for indicators that there's financial distress more than normal, and we're going to be there to help them if they ever get to that point, but we're not there yet. But it is why the Rural Health Transformation Program and getting some infrastructure, deferred maintenance done, getting some other additions and things that we can do to benefit those small facilities, make them more financially viable, is just an opportunity we can't miss.
I will tell you, my wife's from Anaconda, and the Anaconda Community Hospital, they've made some investments. That's a great rural healthcare facility for that community. I would hate to see that asset for a community like that go away. So it's a blessing to see Congress is moving in the right direction. The Montana Hospital Association is keenly aware and partnering in the right way. We're going to keep rural healthcare in Montana viable long-term. None of our healthcare system works without staff. We're going to take a break now, but when we come back, I want to talk to you about staffing healthcare, and what strategies are out there from the Montana Hospital Association. When we come back to Voices of Montana. Well, we're back at it on Voices of Montana, and we're having a great conversation with Ed Buttrey, the president and CEO of the Montana Hospital Association. Ed, you know this from your business background. You can't run a business without people, and likewise, healthcare doesn't work without great quality people. I can also tell you from my personal experience, talking to my beautiful wife every evening when she comes home from her shift, man, we currently don't have the staffing we need to cover all the demands in our healthcare system, and I don't know what the future is going to look like. Just like every other profession, doctors are aging out, nurses are aging out. Honey, I didn't mean any offense by that, but there's a turnover there in healthcare staffing. So man, how are we going to address staffing needs across the board in healthcare?
Yeah, it's a real challenge, and we're not just talking providers. We're talking about support staff, food service, cleaners, maintenance. But from a provider point of view, we know that there is a real shortage in Montana. And if we're going to succeed, you know, we've already built two medical schools. We're building a number of nursing schools right now. We're doing all the things that we need to do to give, you know, to educate students to become that staff. But then getting them into our hospitals means a lot of commitment to graduate medical education and clinical training for those doctors and nurses. And Montana hospitals have really stepped up, which is a tough thing because you're asking existing providers to take time away from the patient to actually provide training for these students. They see the big picture. They understand that that's part of the job. So they've committed to making staff available to train those students. And then we hope that those students will fall in love with Montana like we all have and will remain here to practice. But that is that has become a critical part of our work at hospitals is in that education component. And like I said, we've got the two new medical schools in Great Falls and Billings. We've got nursing schools that are opening or are open in Great Falls, Billings, Bozeman, I think Kalispell, maybe Missoula. And then as far as the MHA, we've been really successful working with the legislature to find policies that promote growth and retention of workforce. We passed compacts this last session for physician assistants, psychologists, respiratory therapists, dietitians, nutritionists. And we've been a real advocate for licensure standardization. And I'll tell you, Steve, the State Department of Labor has been an amazing partner in providing for healthcare workforce. And we've just seen it recently with the announcement of the Jobs 406 program. I mean, they get it. They know that this is a big, important part of our economy in Montana, and they've done a great job.
And Ed, thank you. In your role now, Montana Hospital Association and the leadership hospitals are showing in the education of our healthcare workers. For people that may not understand, you have a nurse that needs clinical training as a part of their education. That takes place in a hospital. So hospitals have to be a part of that training. If you have a doctor who's in medical school in Montana, we hope, right, Ed, that they, the last 2 years of their training in medical school is a clinical-based training, and we need hospital rotations for that. Then once they've graduated medical school, they have residency or what's referred to as graduate medical education. And again, Montana hospitals step up and say, okay, we're going to start training these residents to become practicing physicians. So hospitals are delivering care, but they're also delivering education, which is essential to our future. Thank you for leading that effort. The cost of healthcare, we only had a couple minutes to touch this, but James Brown sent out a note, said, hey, be prepared for the marketplace cost of healthcare through the Affordable Care Act to go through the roof. What's going on with that?
Well, that was one thing that was not addressed in the big bill, and that was extending the enhanced premium tax credit in the marketplace, which expires at the end of the year. I know we don't have a lot of time, but this is one thing that is going to heavily impact Montana. If we don't extend that program, we will see premiums in the marketplace increase around 75% for people that are participating in the exchange. And what ends up happening is your healthiest people drop off the program, and then when they need health care, it becomes uncompensated care in emergency rooms, and you leave the most needy on the program, which adds more cost to the system. And that's why we see our commercial insurers now also raising their premium rates, simply because they're expecting the cost of health care to rise dramatically because of these tax credits. And whether the tax credits directly affect you or not, it's going to affect everyone that seeks to get health care in Montana. This is a big deal. My team and I are actually heading to D.C. next week to talk with our congressional folks to really push for an extension of those tax credits so that we can keep rates affordable. Montanans just simply can't afford to continue to pay more for this insurance, and we hear that every single day. So it's our job number one.
Well, Ed, thank you for the great work that you're doing with the Montana Hospital Association. It's been a pleasure to work with you. Hey, tomorrow on Voices of Montana, Todd O'Hare, President and CEO of the Montana Chamber, will be here. We're going to talk about the state of business in Montana, and we're going to talk about a sales tax You're going to want to listen tomorrow on Voices of Montana.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.
For joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.